The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today we have a very interesting topic, and that is connecting the dots between climate and health. And our very special guest is Kim Knowlton. Kim is a doctor of public health and assistant clinical professor of environmental health sciences at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. And Kim was also senior scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, specializing in the health impacts of climate change. She lives in Tivoli, New York, and is also a member of the Village's Climate Smart Committees Task Force and Village Tree Committees. And she's a member of Third Act Upstate New York, where she's helping plan a celebration of Solar Energy Sunday on September 21st in Albany. We'll hear a little bit more about that. And also, I would also like to add that she is also a member of New York State Public Health Association's Climate Committee, as am I. So, Kim, welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Thank you, Vin. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
It's so great to have you here. So, Kim, are most people surprised to hear that climate change can harm people's health?
I really think they are, Vin. I think that most people, including public health professionals, are surprised to hear about the range of effects that climate change has on our health. It seems to me most people think about melting polar ice and polar bears or storm damage to coastal buildings when they think about climate change. And all of those are really important. But making those connections between those environmental changes and our human health, that's not something that has been widely taught in many schools. And so it's not something that we talk about as much as I believe we should, to better inform ourselves and figure out what we can do to protect ourselves. So that's part of why I'm really glad to be here with you today, Ben, talking.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, Kim, our work at New York State Public Health Association's Climate Committee is really focused on elevating the voice of public health and climate and really making the case, because you know, the health community in general and public health is a trusted voice out there. And we really need to, I feel we need to do a much better job in making those connections.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I was at, as you mentioned, the Natural Resources Defense Council from 2007 to 2023. That gave me a fantastic opportunity, and I'm grateful for it, to make those connections and talk to people more widely. But I feel like there's a lot more work that I want to and need to do in my life just to talk more and more, because these are pressing issues. It's been called widely the most pressing public health challenge of the 21st century. That's how serious climate change is, but there's lots we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, part of that work at National Resources Defense Council was also how to do with working with community partners in India to help develop and launch South Asia's first heat early warning system and action plan. So on that, what would you say are the top three climate health threats globally, internationally, and then also in our area of upstate New York?
That distinction, Vin, between like globally and upstate New York, that's a cool question. Okay, I would say that globally, extreme heat is definitely one of the biggest climate health challenges. I would say flooding is a second. And globally, I'm going to say that population displacement, the fact that so many people, communities, whole regions, whole countries, populations are moving from their place of origin, from their home, in response to climate-fueled extremes, whether it's drought, whether it's extreme heat, whether it is civil conflict, wars are fought over access to water and food and land, and all of those are being threatened by climate change fueled disruptions. That's what I would say globally. And here in New York State, I would say extreme heat, and flooding are both some of our top concerns. I would make our third air pollution that's being increased, made more intense by climate change, because we have at least three different types of air pollution here that are really linked closely to the climate changes that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and most notably the wildfire smoke coming down from Canada.
Indeed.
So Kim, one of the statistics I heard was that, and I forget what organization compiled the report, but it talked about the fact that the war in Syria caused about a million refugees and arguably disrupted geopolitical landscape of Europe. But it's conservatively estimated that climate displacement will cause over 100 million refugees. And we've seen that even in North America, from refugees from Central America coming here because of not only gang and drug violence, but also extreme weather events that rendered agriculture difficult, if not impossible.
Yes, it is a challenge that I don't feel we as a global society have fully risen to meet yet, to connect the dots, not only between climate change and health, but between all of these environmental changes that are being catalyzed by the fact that we have a warmer atmosphere and ocean, measurably warmer in the last, especially in the last 30 years, but in the last 100 years, because of the climate pollution, the pollution that comes from the choice up to this time to use fossil fuels, coal, oil, natural gas, to get our energy from. That blanket, think of it as a blanket around the earth that's trapping in heat that is warming the ocean and atmospheres, the atmosphere, that causes such a wide range of environmental disruption. It is a challenge to scientists, to policymakers and elected officials, and to us people, to connect the dots between that wide range of consequences from climate change. I'm encouraged by the fact that we don't have to remain sort of in the crosshairs of climate change. We can make choices now, right now, that are going to make our public health in the state, in the nation, in the world better, healthier, and more secure when we move toward cleaner energy. Mm-hmm. But for now, as you said, unfortunately, sadly, millions of people around the world have to leave their homes where they've lived for generations in search of food, water, places to make a living. We saw it here after Hurricane Katrina in earlier years. People had to leave the Gulf Coast region and move into every one of the 50 states to try and find, you know, new jobs, new places to live. So we see it here too. Mm-hmm. Mass movement in response to the kind of extreme events being fueled by climate change.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, as you know, 2024 was the hottest year on record, and 2025 is on track to surpass that. And in 2024, there were over 28 extreme weather events that caused over $1 billion in damage, not to mention lost lives and displacement, and, you know, insurance companies pulling out of entire markets or raising premiums so high to cover their losses that people can no longer afford them. What made you start to look at the health-related costs? I mean, those are the dollar costs, but what made you look at the health-related costs of the kinds of extreme weather events that climate change is fueling?
Yes, it is really interesting that when we tally sort of nationally the costs of climate change, we don't include the health-related costs. That's been absent when we look at those billion-dollar disasters. It's other kinds of damage to crops, to infrastructure. Okay, but what made me really, it was an incident in the halls of Congress. I was doing, as a scientist, I was doing a briefing in one of the Senate office buildings, and they have television monitors in the hallways, a lot of them that kind of line the ceiling level in the hallways. And it was 2009. There was footage of the 2009 Red River flooding in North Dakota. It's terrible flooding. It had enormous consequences, billions of dollars of damage. 100,000 people were affected. And I looked at it with my colleagues. We were doing the briefing, and someone said, gee, I wonder how much that costs people's health. And we looked at each other, realized we didn't have the answer. We didn't know where to go for the answer. And we were doing these briefings. It occurred to us, hey, these members of Congress, they would be interested in what these costs are and if we can avoid them. So we undertook to do that bit of research. It took us several years to put together the different data sets that we had to collect the weather information, the information on costs, the information on health impacts. But when we did, we found out that it was costing $10 billion in health-related costs just from a handful, from 10 of the kind of extreme events like that flooding that climate change is making worse. So we try to tell that story far and wide, thinking that it was relevant to discussions about how important it is to step back from climate change.
You know, it almost makes you think that there should be, you know, those digital clocks that tally the ongoing national debt or whatever. It would be interesting to have one of those right in the halls of Congress, you know, tallying the cost of climate change.
I like that.
Sad as it is.
Sad, but if it motivates positive action that can protect everyone and their health and their communities from what we're seeing already, the disruption, it would be a happy clock.
So yeah. Kim, this is such an interesting topic and we want to talk more and learn more. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs. Life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on the Hudson Valley's Talk and Sports Network, The Beacon.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're discussing connecting the dots between climate and health. Our guest is Kim Knowlton. Kim is a doctor of public health and assistant clinical professor of environmental health sciences at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health, and she was also a senior scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council, specializing in the health impacts of climate change. Kim, in the first segment, we talked about generally how climate can harm people's health and what the top threats are, what communities are doing, what some of the costs are. Let's talk for a moment about the medical community. What role do doctors and healthcare providers play in talking about, educating about, and treating consequences of climate change health impacts?
Mm-hmm. I think then that the medical profession should play a huge role and can play a huge role in informing their patients, informing their communities, and in also helping people put together protective responses to know really specifically what to do. But it's pretty exciting that there are a number of medical professional societies that are really like leading the charge and taking a huge, very, you know, active role in naming climate change as the biggest health threat of the 21st century. There is the one group is called the Medical Society Consortium on Climate and Health. They have made it their sort of their focus to connect the dots between climate change and health, to make sure that their members, who are medical professionals and physicians, have in hand information on climate change's impacts on public health. And they really make the case that making changes in our energy choices, moving toward clean energy, it's not only going to improve air quality today, but it's going to have long-term, long-lasting benefits for health as we improve the environment. So that's one group. There's another medical professional group, the National Medical Association, who did some really very interesting surveys a few years ago among their member, their membership, who are largely African-American physicians. They work, you know, not just in cities, but many of them serve urban populations. They were already saying in the surveys that 86% of them said that climate change was relevant to their direct patient care. And they were already seeing that 61% of their patients were being affected by climate change. They identified storms and floods and wildfire as really already creating harms, health harms for their patients. So they were really taking an active role in helping their patients treat those health harms from climate change. The American Medical Association has declared that climate change is a health crisis. And nurses too, of course, the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. There's a lot of very active organizations. I think from our side as patients, and I mean, we are public health and medical professionals too, in some situations, I think it's important for us to talk to our doctors, talk to our nurses, talk to the people who are supposed to help us stay healthy and engage with them, get them engaged in protecting our health. And I think that way we both really increase our engagement and our level of activity in responding to this and making it not the biggest health threat, maybe in our home or in our community, because we're taking action.
And what would some of those actions look like? What can communities do? I know some of the things because I work in public health, but maybe you could help make our listeners aware. What can communities do? What are they doing that are best practices?
Because there's so many responses to protect yourself and your family and your community to each one of those climate health, you know, connect the dots threats that we mentioned, I'm going to pick one and talk about it a little bit. I'm thinking about extreme heat. It's the most direct sort of impact that flows from climate change because we feel it. We all are affected by it, but some of us are affected by extreme heat much more than other people. Older adults, like I am an older adult, one of those older adults, because people's heart and lung systems, you know, organ systems tend to, you know, get a little bit more, if not fragile. They are not as robust as they were once when I was younger. And the heart and lung are very much involved in keeping bodies cool when it's, you know, hot. It's the Dickens outside. So it's a great idea to reach out to your older friends and relatives and neighbors. Make sure that they're okay in heat waves. Many communities, both, you know, at the local county level, the state level, many communities have heat early warning systems. They are tremendously helpful, tremendously effective in getting the word out when there's a weather forecast that it's going to be extremely hot so that people can use the shade. You know, the shade is your friend. Use it if you have to work outside. Keep drinking, you know, water, hydrate for sure. Listen to the weather forecast. Listen to, you know, what's predicted for the heat emergency. Parks are allowed in many places to stay open longer hours so that people have access to shade and outdoor spaces. And by all means, if you do not have an air conditioner at home, think about using a cooling center where there is access to air conditioning to help you cool off for a time. Those are some of the steps that are being taken, but there's even more ambitious ones, like trying to plant more trees in our cities and communities and make sure that buildings are built to take advantage of the prevailing wind and breezes direction and provide more shade within the city. There's a lot of innovative approaches, but those are a few of the ones that we can take individually that I mentioned.
So Kim, I know some of the answers to my next question, because I do a weekly program called the Climate Awareness Minute in conjunction with New York State Public Health Association and Sina Cuts in association with them, rather. What do you see as the biggest obstacles right now in limiting the worst effects of climate change?
Oh boy, right now, I have to mention, because I just in the last couple of days, I've been looking for some of the data online, some of the like jewels, gems, treasures of information and research that bear on public health and that bear on temperatures in time past. A big obstacle now to our research, to our understanding of where we are this year, and we can compare it to last year, is that data access is being reduced more and more by the current folks in Washington, the administration, the regime, call them as you will. But there's an undoing right now of climate observations, sort of letting go the experts who have provided all of us with their knowledge to help us protect our health. There are legislative and regulatory protections that are being undone that are about climate change and health and air quality. It's very concerning at this moment that when we need to move forward and make progress on climate health protections, we're undoing some of the protections of the past. That said, I am not at all discouraged that we will not be able to reinstitute them. And as a citizen, as a voting person, ask questions and demand that protection be something that my elected folks afford me and my community, my family, my friends. That's why we're here. And, that our electeds can provide those protections. I think it's up to me and us as people who care about our health to demand protections. I feel confident that they will be reinstated and that clean energy, which is already just blossoming and, has gained traction in markets and is widely used, will continue to blossom and provide the access, the wide access to affordable energy that we all need. Clean energy that does not pollute and does not warm the planet. That's where I think we're headed. But it's a tough moment right now.
Right. Clean and also less expensive, right? Because once a wind turbine goes up or a solar farm is built, you don't have to purchase fuel to generate power. It's really interesting.
True.
And, getting rid of the data is like, it's like as if, and this is a case of what you don't know will definitely hurt you.
Indeed. You said that's well said. Yes.
So, Kim, we could have an interesting conversation about this for many hours because it's such a rich topic, but we don't have that time. So before we have to go, tell our listeners where they can go to get more information on whatever we've discussed today and perhaps volunteer for meaningful action and awareness.
Sure. Oh, I'd be happy to. Thanks for that opportunity, Vin. Okay, I'm going to mention two from the universe of websites that I could suggest. Here in New York State, we have our own jewel. We have the New York State Climate Assessment. It came out in 2024. It will give you more information in its many chapters. And when it comes to human health, that's in Chapter 7 of the online report. And I'll give you the URL now. It'll give you more information if you have it, if you have questions about the impacts and about what you can do to adapt and protect yourself. The URL is www.nysclimateimpacts.org. nysclimateimpacts.org. That is a report made by New York State for us. It's ours. Grab it. Enjoy it. And the second one is more information about Sunday, which you mentioned, Vin, is going to take place September 21st all across the country. It's going to be a celebration and an exposition and an information sharing about the incredible success of solar energy and clean energy across this country and world. The URL is sunday.earth. That's sunday.earth. You can find out more information about what's happening near you and about what's happening in Albany, New York, where I hope to see you. I'm working on that event in Albany on Sunday, September 21st, but other locations across New York State and the country.
Wonderful, Kim. Well, thank you so much for all of your work, past and present, on our behalf, on your behalf, on it, for our planet, our children's futures. We all need to get involved. It's not health and a healthy environment are not political issues. When the major environmental legislation was signed, Clean Air, Clean Water, in the 70s, it was signed by a Republican president, Richard Nixon, because we all have a vested interest in clean air, clean water, and a healthy environment and a sustainable planet. So thank you, Kim. Thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you, Vin.
You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.